Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 1107. It's the 2nd of July 2018. By the way, if you haven't done it, go to voxmarkets.co.uk/app, that is, download the free app and get free updates as soon as the company you follow releases them. You can also set up many watch lists. I have about 4 at the moment. Companies I own, companies I watch, small caps, all this stuff, big caps. But it's worth doing. Give it a try. It's free, like I say, but priceless. voxmarkets.co.uk/app. Okay, on today's podcast, I have Neil Rickett, CEO of Vesarion. That's VRS. And Neil discusses today's update on its activities in relation to graphene-enhanced power storage devices, such as batteries and supercapacitors. Plus, Bert Monroe, Head of Business Development at Hummingbird Resources, HUM, talks about the start of an exploration drill campaign and provides an update on the results of a study on the underground potential at the Kamana East, below the open pit Yanafalida gold mine. Also, Hanno Pengilly, Chief Development Officer at Ncondesi Energy, NCCL, off the back of their final results last week. Hanno goes through the progress the company's making and what they expect to happen in the next 6 months or so. Also, Dr. Dan Gooding, CEO of Nuformix, NFX, provides an update regarding the company's developments since coming to the market in October 2017. Also, don't forget, I have the top 5 most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top 5 most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Neil Rickett, CEO of Vesarion. VRS is the ticker there. Neil, thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Justin. Sorry, I'm at a train station, so we might get slightly interrupted, but it's the joys of travelling around the country. So,
yeah, just then I heard an awful racket, and I thought, what the heck was that? It was a train going past with this hooter on or whatever, and this horn on, and it sounded like you've been taken out. But anyway, so, Neil, very exciting news released today, and we'll go through the detail of that, batteries, and of course, that's a massive area for the future economy in the world, and energy. Before we do, like always, for someone not familiar with the company or just new to the podcast, give them a quick summary as to explain what Vesarion is all about, please.
Sure. Vesarion founded 2011 to exploit technology at UK universities. And what we do is we take that, those great ideas and we turn them into products by working with big global companies. And that's what we do. We specialize in advanced materials. And this particular podcast is about a very special material called graphene.
Yeah, well, do you know what? Listen, 5 years back, I was listening to an interview about the guy who pretty much invented the iPod, you know? And that revolutionised, didn't it, sort of mobile music listening. And, you know, you went from having a cassette player that plays 24 songs, maybe on two sides of tape, to having an iPod, hundreds and hundreds of songs, was tiny. And he was asked, he said, what would you like to work on next or invent next? And he gave what I thought was a boring answer at the time. This is 5 years back. He said, I'd like to crack the battery. And I said, what do you mean by that? He said, well, batteries at the moment aren't efficient enough to do what I want to do. It's holding back everything in technology. If you crack the battery market, you'll open up a world of technology that's unbelievable. And so, and we've started to realise this now with the electric vehicle generation and every government in the world saying they're going down that route. We realise how important the battery is. And yet, this is why this is very exciting, because everyone's concentrating on cobalt or lithium and nickel. And out of left field, you've got, again, graphene, which will have an effect on so many sectors. Graphene's starting to play a role, realising the conductivity of it is so important, and you've released now this RNS battery technology update. So it's essentially three releases in one. Is something about Zap and Go, a company, Flexibat, and a Chinese graphene order. So take us through it, Neil. Take us through the significance of this, please.
Okay, so this is a joined-up plan. This isn't something that we're just sort of randomly doing. We've got some great partners with WMG and the University of Cambridge. So Cambridge has its own WMG battery-making facility. Our guys are right in the heart of all of that. We've got a very close partnership with WMG. And you're quite right. If we can crack batteries, then the world's our oyster. And there's a huge available market, not only in EVs, but in consumer goods and almost every market, to be honest. It really does unlock technology. And the problem with lithium-ion batteries is that we've only seen very, very steady progress. There's not been a light bulb moment for a while in lithium-ion. And that's what we're hoping to bring.
Yes, so to people not aware, I mean, so what would be the role of graphene in battery? Is it just it can hold energy or conduct? What's the role of what? Why could graphene be used in batteries?
So at a research level, we've already proven that graphene has a big impact on battery performance, whether that be the life of the battery, the amount of charge density, so the amount of power it can hold in a small package, how long it can hold it. Most all of these things can be influenced through graphene and its family of two-dimensional materials. And, that's the real prize. The real prize is to substitute out conventionally used materials like carbon black and put in graphene so that it's not a disruptive stage. It's a step change, but it's actually building on the technology that's already there. And this is huge. I mean, what we're seeing here is huge government support through the Advanced Propulsion Centre and the Faraday Challenge from Innovate. And then we've got our own £1.5 million project here from Innovate to help pump prime all of that research that's required to unlock this new technology.
Yeah, so take us to the first one. So Zap and Go, what are they doing? They're doing sort of storage, yeah?
Yeah, so Zap and Go, small private UK company. We've been we've been very close for a number of years since they started and we started. They've been developing their battery technology. They did a Kickstarter campaign to try and get graphene into super capacitors and batteries. But the important thing is, a couple of years ago, they started to work with some Chinese partners. And hey, look, China suddenly becomes the thing that it's all about. And in this particular instance, we've got a Chinese battery manufacturer that we've received our first order from, and that we've got, that's a very big Chinese company. And then we've got Zap and Go, who are quick, agile, have their own battery facility, have their own connections and contacts. And what we're trying to do is shortcut that development cycle. And the third leg to the stool is that we've got some government money to do it, so that we're not going to our shareholders asking for money to do this.
Yeah, and the reason why there's a big Chinese link here is because I'm not sure, obviously some people will be aware, but China is pretty much leading, isn't it, the EV revolution. They are the biggest developers now. They're trying to secure, I know, lithium supply to sustain this EV revolution, but they're the big market, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, China is lucky enough to be able to make its own legislation. They're not bound by some of the constraints in other nations. If they want to make a decision, they tend to make that decision and follow it through. And they've decided EV is the way forward. So all of the Chinese manufacturers are now powering ahead, quite literally, with battery technology. They're desperate to improve the capacities of the batteries that they've currently got. They need to improve the range, as everybody does, and they're hungry for Western technology. And we're happy to supply that, provided the terms are beneficial to us.
Yeah, I mean, I recently wrote an article on a company that's mining sort of lithium, and there's a quote actually from the Ford chief executive or executive chairman saying, "Where EVs are going, China will lead the world in EV development." So they are doing that. So take us through what does FlexiBat is all about, because that's quite exciting.
Yeah. So this is this came through our partners at Innovate. It was an open call, so it's a competition. This project's been selected as one of the best projects out there. It's all about creating a different type of battery technology, something which is revolutionary, you know, something which is highly disruptive. And that's why, you know, we don't want to take that risk. And Innovate is quite happy to step in with some finance and some support in order to make that happen. Obviously, we've got some great partners on that whole project. And there's bound to be more on that in the future. We've done something like 20 collaborative projects with Innovate. We have a huge amount of credibility for our ability to be able to deliver. And that's what it's all about. It's all about being able to deliver.
And then sort of tying the whole thing up here, you've got a Chinese graphene order with a Chinese automotive battery manufacturer. What are they doing there? Testing it? Or what's happening there?
Yeah, so we've got as a result of me joining the Prime Minister on the trade mission to China at the beginning of the year, this is the fruition of some of that work. They're keen to get going. They're always difficult dealing with a Chinese global manufacturer, and therefore they want to get testing first. So I thought it was interesting that our shareholders should know that we're making good progress. The trip to China was really fruitful for us, and we're starting to see the fruits of that now. So early days, lots and lots of paperwork to follow through that the legal people are getting their teeth into. But in the meantime, they've given us an order and they want to get going straight away.
Yeah, massively, you know, exciting area, the battery space. And you can see now it's sort of infiltrating our sort of environment as we speak. I went to the coast on the weekend and say, obviously 2 years ago, you wouldn't have seen any sort of Teslas around. But I went to the coast, it's like half an hour drive there and back. I saw four or five Teslas. And I think, wow, they're starting, you know, it's starting to happen big time now, you know. And so it is changing the way we, I mean, like I said, every government in the world, pretty much, haven't they, have put a firm date on the cessation of petrol and diesel engines. So it's a massive movement, isn't it?
Yeah, it's going to be huge. And, you know, the thing that's holding it all back at the moment is battery technology. So if you talk to a lot of those names that you just mentioned, you know, they'll tell you that, yeah, we need to make big changes to the technology around batteries, and that's what we're helping to do.
Marvellous, Neil. For anyone listening who likes the sound of this but not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
The first reason is that we're involved in one of the fastest growing sectors in terms of electric vehicles, in terms of batteries, as we've announced today. The second thing is that we have an amazing array of partners that we're working with, which takes the emphasis off the shareholders, or at least the risk off the shareholders, and that's the University of Cambridge, the University of Manchester, Warwick Manufacturing Group, and all of these great centres of excellence. And the third thing is that I'm the biggest shareholder, and therefore you can guarantee that my aspirations are all aligned with those of the shareholders.
Marvellous stuff, Neil. Thanks for coming on, and no doubt you'll have more news out soon, and we'll be chatting again in the not too distant future. In the meantime, have a nice journey wherever you're going, and speak soon.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Bert Munro, Head of Business Development at Hummingbird Resources. HUM is the ticket there. Thanks for coming on, Bert.
Not at all. Thanks for having me, Justin.
Yeah, and you've announced some developments of progress here. I mean, you're obviously producing mines. There's always progress happening, but on the exploration side as well. We're going to the news of that in a bit. Before we do, Bird, if someone's listening to this, I'm not familiar with Hummingbird Resources. How would you summarise the company for them, please?
Hummingbird is an AIM-listed gold company focused currently in West Africa. We've got an operating mine in Mali called Yanfolila, which is forecast to do over 100,000 ounces of production this calendar year. We've also got a large asset in Liberia, the Digby Gold Project, as well as a suite of other exploration assets and a large interest in Kora Gold, another AIM-listed exploration business.
Absolutely. Okay, well, let's talk about the news today. Commencement of exploration drilling campaign and results of Kamana East underground study. So there's a lot going on here. Break it down for us, Bert.
Yeah, there is a lot going on. And as you said at the start, there's always a lot going on when you've got an operating mine. Mm. This is in part confirmation of what we've already said we're going to be doing, which is investing around $8 million into exploration. It's taken a fair bit of preparation, but we've just mobilized a large number of drill rigs and they've started drilling, which is great news. So it's about executing that exploration program, which is really the conversion of existing known resources across six deposits into reserves, we hope over the course of this year to significantly extend the mine life. So that's the first part. So it's confirmation of that starting, albeit we previously announced our plan to do it. The second part is the results of the Kamana East underground study. So Kamana East is our main pit. We're currently mining it, all the gold we've produced to date from Kamana East. Uh-huh. There's a large amount of resources outside of the open pit, so essentially below the bottom of the open pit. So DRA, a very well-established South African contracting company, completed an underground study, and essentially it would be the plan to go underground from the bottom of that open pit. So this is a conceptual study, and obviously part of what we're doing this year is going to be drilling those ounces into reserves, we hope, so those ounces can then actually come into the mine plan and be officially extending the mine life. But I think this conceptual study would add you at least another year to your mine plan as it stands. But I think already, hopefully, our shareholders can start to see the benefits or the purpose of the $8 million we're investing. It's really to add, a number of years to the mine plan by the conversion of resources to reserves.
Yeah, absolutely. And at the moment, your share price has been grinding a bit lower. It seems 30 pence seems to be a good support level. And but you had some a while back, a couple of weeks back, probably a month back now, a security alert. The operations were affected. Is that still the case? Everything was still running smoothly there?
Yeah, operations weren't affected, I guess. Yeah, obviously, there was a very tragic incident around our site, which was very unfortunate, which we announced at the time, where the Malian army got involved with trying to remove some illegal artisanal miners from one of our future pits. And unfortunately, it didn't end well. So that was obviously a very tragic incident. I think importantly, and we made the point in the RNS at the time, the mine was still operating and still running. It's continued to run continuously since then. I think the other thing we've stated in this RNS is that mining has started at Kamana West. We've been doing the clear and grub work, and then there's the grade control drilling, and also we are now mining ore from Kamana West as well. So progress has moved on really well at Kamana West, even though obviously it's obviously started in a very tragic and unfortunate way. Across the board at the process plant and at Kamana East, things have been great actually. I think you talked a little bit about the share price being a bit stagnant. I think it's obviously frustrating for us. I think when we thinking back a year or so ago when you're building the mine and you're all hoping you're going to deliver on time and budget, you do that. And then you think, can we ramp it up on time? You do that. And then you think, we've just ended our first quarter of commercial production. Everything's on track. And you would have anticipated, from a share price performance, probably performing a little bit better. But ultimately, our job is to deliver operations. And as a business, our job is to make sure we hit our targets, hit our milestones. Our job isn't to manage a share price. And I hope, obviously, with a Q2 RNS coming up in the next few weeks, the wider market will be able to see, what we've achieved in Q2, which hopefully will be a very positive RNS, and look forward from there. So I think for us, we've obviously always been focused on delivery and making sure we continue to hit our milestones of what we said we're going to do, and that's sort of been our primary focus.
Yeah, because obviously the last RNS, as far as production is concerned, weren't a full account of what's going to be happening or what you hope to produce. So What, you know, target-wise, let's just go through this for people not aware of the production run rate and the financials around it, what you hope to achieve. So what are you aiming for, and what do you think you'll get there?
Yeah, so in Q1, which was a quarter of ramp-up, so the mine was obviously gradually ramping up to full-scale production, we produced around 18,500 ounces of gold. Mm-hmm. For the full calendar year, so for the full calendar year of 2018, we've given indication of around 105 to 115,000 ounces of gold produced. So obviously, over the three full quarters of production, it's obviously, you know, it's, you know, take off 18,500 ounces, and that's obviously what you should be doing a quarter. So in that respect, you know, give or take 30,000 ounces a quarter is what you should be looking at. In terms of the first full commercial year of production, we've always stated that it would be around 130,000 ounces. We're still happy that that's our plan. So essentially the 1st of April 2018 to the end of March 2019 would be your first full year of commercial production. And that's obviously targeting around 130,000 ounces. So on average, a little bit over 30,000 ounces a quarter, I guess, to get there.
Yeah. And you're saying what all in production is around 700, is that right? Bucks an ounce?
A little bit more. I guess the guidance we've been giving is sort of 750 to 800 range. I think the life of mine from the feasibility study was 700 over the life of mine, 7 years. I think first year, obviously, you're ramping up production. Obviously, you know, there's a fair amount of pre-strip on some of the pits and stuff. And ultimately other factors such as, you know, fuel price, which has, you know, more than doubled since we did our feasibility study in Mali, obviously have implications on your all-in sustaining costs. So, yeah, the first year, our guidance is around that 750 to 800 range.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so
but given the gold price this year has obviously been generally between 1250 to sort of 1330, obviously, and our study was all based on 1250 alone. Obviously, yeah, I think you're still making very good money at that all-in cost.
Yeah, so even if I'm doing, you know, using round figures, 100,000 ounces a year, say $500 clearance, that's about $50 million dollars clearance free cash flow, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, yeah. But I mean, obviously, we're looking to do a few more ounces than 100,000, which would obviously be good. Yeah. And obviously, I think the gold price, the average gold price this year has probably been more around the 1300 mark than, more around the 1300 mark, a little bit over than the 1250 mark.
Yeah, but even on a very conservative basis, you know, so keep that, for investors, almost keep that figure, do the maths, and realize that, you know, your market cap is what, just over a smidge over 100 million. So that's, yeah. You can do the math there and work that out. Marvellous stuff. And like I say, you are investing Kora as well. I mean, having been believing, you know, exploration in Mali, and Kora's doing that. How's things going with Kora? I know you're on the board of Kora as well.
Yeah, Kora's done. I mean, it's done a great job. Obviously, it listed last October, raised money and listed onto AIM. And since then, it's been had done a really aggressive drill program. It's been drilling out predominantly Sanan Koro and Tekle Dugu. So Sanan Koro's around 90 kilometers to the north of the Amphalila project. They've got a very large potential deposit there, a large anomaly there. It's over 10 kilometers in the strike length, which is, you know, very large scale. And then you've got, on the other hand, you've got Tekle Dugu, which is only 8 kilometers from our process plant, so extremely close. And they've only done the very first pass drilling results, which were released earlier this year, and they're currently drilling there at the moment. But, you know, those initial results were looking like very high grade, you know, oxide ounces, which are, you know, nice, generally free digging, easy milling ounces, which are normally very profitable. So I think they, you know, they've got a grip on what looks to be two very exciting permits there. And obviously, as you said, Hummingbird's you know, got a big shareholding in Kora. So we're wishing them all the best success with the drilling campaign, and I guess looking forward to news as they've got it on drill results.
Yeah, and as far as you can see, you have capacity at your mine. If that was the case, they could sort of process the ore there, could they?
From Tekle Dugu?
Yeah.
Yes. Mm. Yeah, I mean, I think, and also that's part of the plan from our exploration drill program. Mm-hmm. We're currently carrying out on our mining permit. I think, you know, Hummingbird's, the mine, obviously, over the life of mine, it anticipates producing around 30 to 40% oxide material, then around 60 to 70% fresh rocks, obviously harder material, which needs more crushing. So additional oxide material, which obviously Tekle Dugu looks to have lots of from the initial drill results, and obviously our focus on our exploration drill program at some of our pits, which aren't currently in the mine plan, is around bringing in more oxide material, because then the process plant itself can process more of it, and obviously you can maintain high levels of production for longer. And equally, twofold to that, like we're focusing at Gonka, and I guess like Cora might have found at Tecla Duga. If you bring in higher grade material, you get more production, obviously. So one of the exciting things about Gonca for us is you've got the 4.5 gram a ton underground ore body, so give or take 50% higher grade than what our current reserve mine life is. So if you're bringing in 50% better grade, you're obviously producing a lot more ounces for the same amounts of tons being processed. So for us, that is, you know, for us, that's exciting. And I think, yeah, from a Cora perspective, I can't obviously speak for them too much, but I think, you know, they're an early stage exploration business, so their focus really is about making discoveries and building up resources. So, you know, their focus is on proving up, you know, Tecla Duga to the best of its ability. So hoping the drill results continue to come through to show good wide mineable intersections with decent grade in oxide material. And if that comes through, then you know, Cora will be very pleased and be doing very well, yeah, for sure.
Marvellous stuff. Well, listen, Bert, Ben has listened to this and likes the sound of Hummingbird here and what you're doing and how you're progressing as well as exploration side as well as production, but are not following the story. Give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Yeah, no problem. So I guess the first reason would be that we've just finished the first quarter of commercial production, the end of Q2. So in the coming weeks, we'll be getting out a Q2 update overviewing the first full quarter of commercial production. So that should be one good reason to follow us. The second reason, obviously, today's RNS, the fact that we are aggressively starting this exploration program to extend the mine life, I think that should be a very good driver for the business, making the mine life significantly longer than 7.5 years, which is our target. And I think the third reason, obviously, is general exploration potential across the board. As you said, we've got a big interest in both Cora Gold, but we've also got plenty of exploration ground ourselves. So that should offer lots of potential optionality for shareholders as well.
Marvellous stuff, Bert. Good to chat to you. And hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Brilliant. Thanks a lot, Justin. Nice to talk to you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Hanno Pingilly, Chief Development Officer of Ncondesi Energy. NCCL is the ticker there. Hanno, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Justin.
Now, you recently released your final results for the year, ended 31st December, of course, largely historical, looking back over 6 months, and we'll cover that in a bit, and also we'll jump forward to look at what we can expect in the next 6 months. Before we do, Hanno, for someone listening right now, not familiar with the company, or brand new to investing, can you summarise for them what Ncondesi is all about, please?
So Ncondesi is an advanced stage integrated coal mine and coal-fired power station project located in northern Mozambique, looking to develop a 300-megawatt power station with its partners General Electric and China Machinery Engineering Corporation.
Excellent stuff. Okay, well, the final results. It's a big document, of course, the actual document that comes out. A lot of work goes into it, but like I said, when you do it, when you complete it, it's largely historical, looking back at what you have achieved, and shares and share prices are largely about the future. So we'll dig into the highlights from the past 6 months, past 12 months, and then we'll look to the future. So first and foremost, give us some of the highlights that you've achieved in the last 12 months as pointed out in this document, please, Hanno.
Sure, Justin. And look, as you say, unfortunately it's a covers a period of 2017, and obviously a lot's happened since then, from January this year. But I think it summarizes good progress that has been made to date with the project. The main developments I think that everyone's focused on at the moment is the developments with our potential partners, General Electric and China Machinery Engineering Corporation, for which we signed a non-binding offer in November of last year for them to acquire a 60% equity stake in the power plant and mine projects. And with respect to the progress that we've made with those partners, we highlight the fact that we've completed a number of key steps, including site visits, meetings with government and receipt of support from government to move forward with our partners, updating of our financial model, which was important to update the proposed tariff that we would go back to government with. And finally, you know, the sign-off from our partners on that financial model to say that they had, you know, everyone was aligned with respect to the new tariff proposal that would be put forward to government. And really, I think the report just highlights that, you know, we're well positioned to move things forward. Mozambique needs the power urgently, particularly in the north where we're located, where currently the grid is 100% dependent on hydroelectricity, which is very good from a renewables perspective. But unfortunately, due to significant drought in the region, that power plant is operating at about anywhere from 2/3, 3/4 capacity, which means that there's serious effects to supply and reliability of electricity in the region. We are the most advanced project in the country. A lot of our technical advisors who work on many other projects in the region, made it very clear to us that, we are probably the most advanced in Mozambique, certainly the most advanced coal-fired project. And we're uniquely positioned to get this project off the ground in the country for a number of reasons. Firstly, we are the only project which has a dedicated fuel source, which has been optimized for low-cost fuel supply, allowing us to optimize our tariff. A lot of other projects are dependent on third-party supply of fuel, whether it be coal or gas, to supply their projects, whereas the Nkondezi project has a dedicated fuel source. We can, because of the advanced nature of our project, I think we're the only project that can deliver first power by 2022, which is very close to what government is targeting first power, but specifically from coal projects. They've actually stated it to be 2023. But that's all obviously up for negotiation. We are also a fully integrated project, and I think that's very important because it basically means that both the power plant, its fuel source, as well as its connection into the grid are all under one project roof, if you will. And that's important because, first of all, you can tender a full, what they call a full EPC wrap, which means that your CapEx proposal covers all, comes under one larger bid, which is then further optimized from a cost perspective. It also assists from a timing perspective and moving the project forward, getting all the signatures signed off, etc. Because you've got a single development entity that can make all those decisions. A number of projects in Mozambique don't have that. It's a separate development entity that's providing the fuel source, the power plant, as well as a connection to the grid. And Nkondezi, as I say, unique in that it's fully integrated. We also have two world-class partners who are looking to take a 60% equity stake in the project. Now, this is hugely important in Mozambique, and I must stress this to people, and I can't stress it enough, is that in Mozambique, you can only get so far in your development program until government will turn around to you and say, well, where are the credible operators and owners of the project? A lot of development companies, don't have operational track records. And so, Mozambique will specifically ask where that expertise is coming from. And really, where we got to 2 years ago was we got up to a certain level of development where suddenly this was put in front of us. We weren't allowed to go any further forward. So it's a critical milestone in allowing the project to move forward. And, particularly when you talk about power purchase discussions, where you talk about that agreeing the tariff and agreeing the offtake for the 25 years, as well as your power concession agreement. Government will not start those negotiations without a strategic partner on board that has that prerequisite expertise. And really, I don't think you're going to find two better partners than what we've identified in General Electric and CEMEX. So, puts us in a hugely advantageous position. Mm-hmm. And with those partners on board, they've been able to put forward a technology proposal over the last 4 months, which has allowed us to reduce our tariff from what we had previously agreed with government with our previous development partners. We've now been able to reduce that tariff by over 10%. So we're very optimistic about our new tariff proposal that's gone to government. We're positive about the future and feel we're very well positioned to move things forward. And when I talk about moving things forward, really, the next phase here now, and we've said it in the market, is we've put our proposal together. We've had preliminary discussions on how to move things forward, but with government. But really, the crux is that we're now gearing ourselves up for formal presentation of that tariff proposal to government, to the local electricity utility EDM, to get their formal sort of sign off to move the project forward. And again, I think we're very well positioned to do that. And you know, that really is the next critical step to complete GE and CMEX due diligence to then sign binding documentation on the you know, on the 60% investment in what we call a joint development agreement or the JDA. So all very well positioned, as I say, to move things forward. Importantly, we've got some key valuation milestones. I say valuation, sorry, I mean sort of uplift milestones, which will sort of further cement the project's viability. And you know, those are as follows. The first one is you know, support from EDM on the new tariff proposal. The second one will then be the execution of the JDA. And the final one, which you know we're not losing sight of here, is we have a shareholder. You know, although at the moment we have working capital for another 12 months, that's assuming that we refinance or restructure our shareholder loan, which is maturing at the beginning of September. Now, all three of those key milestones are things that you know are near-term targets. For the first two milestones are during this month, so it's a tight time frame, which we are very much focused on delivering at the moment. The shareholder loan is something that I think we've got a good track record in restructuring and extending, and we're looking at a number of options at the moment on how to do that, and I'm fairly confident that we will conclude a solution, because we've got a number of potential solutions that we're working on at the moment. So overall, you know, good progress made to date. July is a very busy month. And, you know, I think we're well positioned to deliver on those milestones that I just mentioned to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sorry, very, very, very long-winded there, but through.
Listen, people, investors listen to this, and the more detail you give, the better, Hanno. I mean, lack of detail is one thing. In fact, one bit of detail that an investor's asked, Richard, I mean, he said that the deal terms of the JDA, the Joint Development Agreement, of course, haven't been released publicly. And he was asking specifically about costs and stuff. I know you can't cover a lot of that because it hasn't been revealed. But is there any more sort of detail you can give on that?
So this is a question we get quite a lot. And unfortunately, as I say, I can't give the specifics. But, you know, what I can talk to is how, at least from our experience, and, you know, this is probably this is the second formal process that we've run on doing a transaction of this nature. And, you know, what I can tell you from experience and what we've seen and how these deals are structured, because, you know, before I'd worked with Nkondesi on this development, I'd never been part of a deal of this structure, of this nature. So I understand why investors in the market are equally as unfamiliar. But it's important to highlight that the way power transactions work typically is that, you know, you very much focus on the historical development costs of the project, or what they call recognized development costs. And basically what will happen is if someone is investing into the project, they will typically invest in based on the development costs incurred to date. Now, you know, Nkondesi in its previous transaction with its previous partner, you know, had stated that, you know, at that stage we had about, you know, just under $20 million of historical development costs. And, you know, at this stage, that number still sits around about that number. It's increased slightly because we have done further work, but it is circa that number. And certainly we would expect any equity investment from a new partner to recognize those historical development costs as part of, you know, as part of any transaction. And, you know, typically what you will see the new development partner invest in against that development cost number. So, you know, if someone's looking to take a 60% equity stake, they would have to basically either reimburse 60% of the development historical development costs, or invest into the project up to a stage where, you know, their input equates to 60% of the development costs. So from an Nkondesi perspective, that's still very much up for negotiation. We still have development expenditure to get to financial close. It's not enormous, but you know, there are some costs. It's certainly not going to cover 60%. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we would expect in a transaction that, you know, basically the future development costs of the project would largely be covered by our new partners. And how we get reimbursed for our historical development costs. You know, it'd probably be something that, you know, typically we would expect to see that kind of money reinvested into the project at financial close. Partners don't typically like to see equity paid into projects to just go into shareholder pockets. They would like to see that money reinvested, and I wouldn't expect anything too dissimilar here. Certainly, that was what we saw with the previous deal with our previous development partners. But also important to highlight that, you know, generally what happens is there's also a developer's premium to be paid in these types of projects. Now, our previous development partner, you know, we'd agreed a development premium of about $30 million. At this stage, you know, we're still very much in negotiation about that developer's premium with our new partners. And really that premium it's basically how much can you afford to pay without affecting the project IRR. You know, that's how the development premium is calculated. So it's calculated at financial close generally, or very close to, and it's basically an additional cash payment that that we can either use, and at that stage we can use to dividend to shareholders, or, which I probably think would be more likely, will be utilized to sort of reinvest it into the into our project equity at financial close. But anyway, that's a very long-winded answer, but I hope that just gives everyone a sense of what the structure of these deals look like. Mm-hmm. I think most importantly from an Nkondezi perspective is that, you know, we would ideally want to position ourselves so that, you know, once the new partner is on board, you know, the capital requirements from us to get to financial close will be minimal. And that at financial close, you know, with the reimbursement of historical development costs and the payment of a developer's premium, we're trying to reduce our equity check requirement as much as possible, you know, to build the power plant.
Okay. All right. Well, listen, Hanno, lots of detail there. But just if you can sum it up in bullet point form, people listening right now, like I said, the progress of this, but not following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Sure. So we are the most advanced development project in Mozambique, one of the most developed coal development projects in the Southern African region. We have two world-class partners looking to take a majority equity stake in the project. And, you know, we've got very short-term delivery of bringing those partners on board. You know, at the moment, the target is the end of July. Mm-hmm. So near-term news flow, lots of good near-term news flow.
Excellent stuff. Hanno, it's good to chat to you. And like I said, very busy. So hopefully, and you say, near-term news flow, hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Great. Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Dr. Dan Gooding, CEO of Nuformix. That's NFX. Ticker Dan, thanks for joining me.
Pleasure, Justin. How are you doing?
Yes, good. And we haven't chatted for a while. And there's been a lot. You've done a lot in the background, and you've had a release out today about a strategic and commercial update. And we'll get into the details of that in a bit. But for people listening, Dan, who've never heard of you or slightly heard of you, but are not quite sure what you do, can you summarise what Nuformix is all about, please?
Thanks, Justin. Well, Nuformix is a pharmaceutical development company. So what that means is that we are working with small molecule drugs. And we're looking to develop those small molecule drugs to a proof of concept where we've demonstrated that those products have a new utility against treating an unmet need. Our business model is then to out-license those products to a larger market-facing pharmaceutical company that will look to commercialize those products. So that's our business model. We file patents, we validate the concept behind those patents, and then we look to out-license them.
Yeah, and your pipeline of drugs is based on something called CoCrystal. Now, what is this technology, Dan? Can you just basically, don't get too technical about it, but can you just simplify it, and how does that work?
Well, let's just go back one step. So I think, mm-hmm. firstly, what differentiates Nuformix is the fact that we're trying to create new therapies based on known drugs. Mm-hmm. Now, that presents a very different risk profile as a biotech company than what you'd see with a traditional model. Known drugs, for a start, have a history of really good safe use. There's no need usually to generate new safety data to support entry to clinic, etc. And also clinical development is a lot more rapid compared to traditional models. You know, developing new products based on known drugs, you know, is not a new idea. But what is new is exactly what you've said, is about using CoCrystal technology to enable and support that process.
Okay, and And so it, obviously, when you have that safety profile, that existing safety data, it reduces time and cost. But how does the drug? Why is the drug any different then from what it was, you know, previously used?
Sure. So our technology itself allows us to do new things with known drugs. So actually, what we're able to do is modify the original drug in a way that improves our ability to deliver it or use it more meaningfully as a therapy. So we improve, if you like, key performance criteria of the drug at the same time as also creating a new substance of matter patent protection. Mm-hmm. However, regulators see our co-crystal drug forms as if it were the original drug form itself. So we can use the existing safety data that sits there with regulators to get into patients more quickly. That known safety aspect means that we don't have any risk of mm-hmm. failing for safety reasons, which are obviously common in the biotech space.
Yeah.
The speed, which I'm referring to, is obviously our speed to get into patients a lot more quickly. Mm-hmm. So we can get into some of the kind of key value inflection point activities without having to generate safety data, which incurs a time and a cost, and we can get information about what's happening in patients way more quickly than one could do in a traditional model.
Yeah, and I suppose investors are not aware, and that's probably the biggest risk, isn't it, for small biotech companies, pharmaceutical companies, are the risk of their drug failing in trials. That's, and so, you know, that's the big problem, isn't it?
There is that's one problem. You know, there were two reasons why drug companies fail. One is for safety issues. Second is because we have a lack of efficacy in the intended new use. So, in terms of the first risk, we've completely discharged that already. We're working with known drugs. You know, we understand their safety profile completely. Also, because we've got so much more information now about what known drugs do in humans, we've got a much more informed position when we're thinking about what their potential is for doing, interesting things in new therapeutic areas. So, you know, we've also de-risked that aspect as well, because the things that we're trying to do, we understand much more implicitly than if one was starting from a complete de novo position, which, you know, is the traditional model for pharma companies.
Absolutely. And before we get into the questions about all the updates you've released, so can you just say which areas you are tackling with your drugs?
Of course. I think it's probably best to focus on our lead programs initially. Our first lead program, NXP number one, that is looking at an oncology supportive care product. So for patients receiving chemotherapy, helping them with the side effects of receiving chemotherapy. So obviously that's a very large number of patients that are currently underserved in the side effects of receiving treatment. In our second program, we're actually looking at developing a treatment for fibrosis. Fibrosis is a condition that affects nearly all major organs and is associated with a very high mortality rate. Very functional tissue, such as tissue in the lung, becomes compromised and unable to do its job. So we're developing an agent, a known drug, that will address fibrosis.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So there are two. If you're asking me about what are, you know, our two areas of immediate interest, it's those two areas. However, there is obviously a growing pipeline behind those two areas of initial focus also.
Okay. So like I say, it's been a while since we chatted. So tell us, Dan, how are you progressing with the company overall?
Well, we've made some really important additions to the team. We've really bolstered the team at board level. At operational level, we've made some simply world-class hires there, where we can benefit from all of the experience that they bring in terms of a proven track record in value creation in life sciences. With those new teams in place, we've performed a complete strategic review of all of our lead programs, early stage programs and pipeline development opportunities and their associated commercial opportunities. And that review fully supports all of the planned activities that we already had in place, which is really, really encouraging.
Okay, we've touched on them, but can we sort of go back and tell us where you are with your core programs at the moment, please, Dan?
Of course. Well, as we were just discussing, NXP-001. This is our oncology supportive care product. This is also a product which we've previously announced an agreement with a marketing partner in China. That program is running absolutely on track, and we're hopefully soon to announce that we've achieved an initial development milestone with that Chinese marketing partner, which triggers a payment of $500,000. So in terms of entering the clinic with that program, we're expecting clearance from the MHRA to conduct that first clinical program in November. We're then scheduled to dose our first patients in January, where we'll perform a short bioequivalent study. So this is where we're comparing our co-crystal-based version of a currently marketed oncology supportive care product to the reference product. Now, a success in that program also triggers then a second milestone payment of £2 million sterling. For NXP002, again, our strategic review has been very supportive of all of our plans to develop that molecule towards fibrosis. That strategic review, combined with emerging preclinical data, is actually strongly supporting the development of the treatment for lung fibrosis, known as idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, or IPF. So we have an ongoing study, as previously disclosed, where we're looking at the performance of NXP002 in human IPF lung tissue. That study is scheduled to read out in September 2018 as well. So both products in terms of lead programs are on track and soon to reach significant points in terms of commercial milestones and readouts on key data.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, so let's bring us up to date on today's announcement. What can you say about this, strategic and commercial update? And also, what can we expect to see over the coming months, please, Dan?
We've talked about new additions to the team. We've talked about progress that we've made with our lead programs. You know, behind all of this, we're also trying to maximize our opportunity to address the met needs with our co-crystal technology approach. So in terms of pipeline development, we're continuing to validate a select number of early stage co-crystal based products to support their future progression to clinic. We're also pleased to announce that we're discovering new co-crystal drug forms for molecules which we believe have strong therapeutic and commercial interest. We've also announced a collaboration with St. George Street Capital, where we will share future development risk with St. George Street Capital in supporting their development of their proprietary assets using our technology. So I think this is a really good example of the kind of collaborations and news which we can expect to publish going forwards. We have an ability to create new IP and improve the properties for small molecule drugs. This is a really attractive capability. So for someone like St. George Street Capital, who is looking to see if it can reinvigorate stalled big pharma projects, often you find in a stalled situation of an asset, maybe in a big pharmaceutical company, that the patent associated with that asset is running down because development times take so long. And if something has been stopped for reasons that are certainly not related to a strong scientific reason, the IP position can start to run down. So we're obviously able to address that problem with our technology. It's just one example of the kind of collaborations we're looking to form, where companies are looking for something similar. They've got an idea about how to use a known drug, or they've got a small molecule that they want to develop where the performance of that molecule or the IP around that molecule isn't in good shape. So we can bring a lot to that situation. So we're looking to do a discrete number of these kind of collaborations where we're looking to use our technology in those kinds of situations, but also then share the upside in terms of how those products are developed going forward.
Marvellous stuff. Well, Dan, thanks for coming on and giving us an update. And before you go, for people listening right now who are like the sound of the progress you're making but are not yet following the story, could you give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please?
Of course. The first reason, I think, would be the team. If one does their research on the team, it's a proven team in terms of the aspirations that the company has in terms of achieving success in commercialization of these kinds of products. If you look at Chris Blackwell, his record at Vectura, if you look at Andy Richards and his track record in terms of reprofiling plays, you know, they're absolutely phenomenal people to have associated with the company. And we've now got the opportunity to deliver with that team in place. The second reason would be our lead programs. We've got near-term commercial milestones that we're hitting. But also with our second program, you know, we've got significant upside in terms of fibrosis. So there's a lot of excitement around the scale of that opportunity around that program. I think lastly, as I mentioned, you know, our technology has got wide ranging capability, you know, to take known drugs into key new therapeutic areas. You're able to do that more quickly and with reduced risk. So I would say one, team, two, lead programs, and three, you know, the broader potential of the technology.
Marvellous stuff. Dan, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Justin.
OK, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are as follows. At five, SDX Energy. That's SDX. At four, Block Energy, BLOE. At three, ROC, Rockfire Resources. At two, Europa Metals, EUZ. Now, I wrote a blog about this on the weekend. Feel free to check it out. You can see it on their page at Vox Markets or the blog section. And I genuinely believe, oh, it doesn't matter what I believe, is it? But I think this is going to be one of the best performing stocks of the year just based on their market cap and the asset they have in Spain, a friendly jurisdiction, and the fact they have cash to develop it through major milestones. And the first one being the scoping study, which puts some economics around the project. And I think when that comes out, it'll re-rate. In fact, the expectation of that coming out in Q4 will sort of push the price up, I think. But like I said, it's a 3 million market cap. That's all it is. They raised £1 million, and they've got a big asset in Spain, zinc, lead, and silver. And number one most followed company is UK Oil and Gas, going crazy at the moment, UKOG. All right, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, T3 Resource, major increase at Metal Tiger, MTR. At four, Sirius Minerals, quarterly progress update, SXX. At three, Lions Gold Limited, mobile banking gold currency update, Lion is the ticker there. At two, Neil's on the podcast, Vesarian, and that's battery technology update. And number one is from Greatland Gold, Black Hills, further gold found in surface samples. That's GGP ticker. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hear the intriguing stories behind some of the world's best love songs in the FT's Life of a Song podcast. From soul to funk, to punk to jazz, discover how classic songs like Smells Like Teen Spirit, Yesterday, and Stairway to Heaven were born. Search online or listen at ft.com/podcasts. Plus, don't miss the new Life of a Song book, featuring a compilation of 50 songs that have appeared in FT weekend columns. Pick up your copy from Amazon, your local bookshop, or give a gift to someone who'd enjoy this brilliant literary mixtape.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine.
So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's,